The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City and video streaming. You can watch today's show as well as listen. I call this the Empowerment Hour for a simple reason. I can promise you this, that no matter what your position, your background, your status, you will learn information today that can improve the quality of your life and give you greater insights into many of the problems we face today, and more importantly, their positive solutions. For example, when was the last time any of the mainstream or internet radio programs, or for that matter, cable television, did a full discussion on the world's water crisis and the corporatization of water resources, meaning privatization, and its long-term consequences? You don't hear it. Well, we do. And Maud Barlow, who is the national spokesperson for the Council of Canadians, will be on to talk about what we have to know about our water and why, if we don't pay attention to our water, we will be victimized by what we do not focus on. More on genetically engineering today. I'll tell you the latest about potatoes. I'll also tell you about why we should have a congressional investigation into KBR. Those are the individuals formerly associated with Vice President Dick Cheney, who are causing some cancer in soldiers who served in Iraq, and I'll tell you about that. Also, I'll talk about the food safety bill and give you a few quotes from when big agribusiness attacks. They use our government to sponsor pesticide programs. And commentary later today, a very interesting original commentary, my own commentary, on something that inspired my thought yesterday, speaking to our 3 o'clock guest, a really interesting woman. You should listen to that show. I'm going to bring her back for a full hour. I'm going to share a thought on why the entire paradigms that we live with today should be reexamined and changed. I do not believe that science has shown itself responsible or capable of understanding the intricacies of life. And we will explore that in my commentary. Let's begin. You've heard me speak about how we can slow down the aging process. Indeed, how we can actually reverse it. We can grow new hair at its natural color in many ways. In fact, in a study, the only study I'm aware of its kind, this was going back 15 years ago, we took 1,200 individuals approximately, and for the better part of 6 months, we gave them a very healthy protocol. Those who stuck with the protocol had a substantial increase in hair growing where it was bald, hair changing back to its natural color, and where they were thinning, filling it out. We did it again in a health support group and published the results. Now I'm even coming up with a new protocol. I don't have anyone on it yet. I'm using myself as an experimental guinea pig. Just a few months ago, I had a crew cut. In fact, to get the actual measurement from the scalp on, I had part of my scalp cut down to the skin to measure it and photograph it. I wanted to see the exact amount of growth per month so I could say, okay, it's a quarter inch, half inch, whatever it might be, and the color and thickness and texture. And then at the same time, do the same for my skin. In fact, if you look now, you'll see I have no blemishes. And yet, if you look in the film Supercharge Your Immune System, I had a aging spot that I had for a number of years from sun damage under my left eye. That's gone. Another one above my right eye. That's gone. All of these are gone because of the phytonutrients, the density, the amount, and frequency of flooding the body with healing enzymes, healing antioxidants, and healing phytonutrients many of which we still don't know what they do. We just know that they rejuvenate. Well, now here is the hypothesis. If you're taking in something that can rejuvenate your skin or your hair or your eyebrows or your fingernails, then what is to prevent that from rejuvenating other tissue organs or glands in your body? So now we have a new program. In fact, we're meeting tonight. I'll be there on healing the brain naturally. And we have a buddy system where people who have been in previous health support groups who've overcome their Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and multiple sclerosis will be there to help others so that they have someone who has Alzheimer's now working with someone who has improved on their Alzheimer's. So in between the every two-week meeting, they can talk and keep online. But what we've seen is that in rejuvenating the brain, it doesn't matter what condition you have. What will rejuvenate the brain of a person with MS will rejuvenate the brain with a person with Alzheimer's, rejuvenate the brain with a person with dementia. And it's all based upon repairing the DNA. What level do you have to have something in the body in order to create that repair? So it's a very exciting time. I believe that we're about to make some quantum leaps ahead. And later this week, we'll be talking with Dr. Bruce Lipton for a full hour on not just epigenetics, but even going beyond epigenetics into dual universe energy fields. So that'll be an interesting conversation you won't want to miss, and he's on the next day or two. So anyhow, you first have to look at the totality of everything, and then you say, okay, it's a big picture. There's lots of pieces. How do we make it work? For some people, based upon their conditioning, their background, their will, and their life energy, they can do it all. A to Z, they'll get rid of the clutter, they'll get rid of the bad foods, and they'll incorporate a healthy diet. For other people, it's not so easy. So you have to have a program that is flexible enough to consider people's comfort needs. Not everyone will let go of a bad substance, smoking, drinking, sugar, all at once. They'll do it in segments. Similarly, I ask people to take new nutrients into their body piece by piece. I don't even ask them to take it full dosage. I ask them to start at 1/5 dosage, and over a period of 5 months, each month add another fifth in. So by the fifth month, you're at full dosage. That way the body can adapt and acclimate to an increase that will affect, in a positive way, its biochemistry. Let me tell you the latest thing that I believe that we should be using that most people are not. I believe this would make an enormous difference. It is known as DHEA. Now, DHEA is very important. Why? Because there's an enormous amount of research in peer-reviewed literature showing that it is the youth hormone. It is our anti-aging hormone. It is a precursor hormone. Now, precursor means that the body will use this hormone to make other hormones. And all of our sex hormones are made from it. It's steady in its decline. It's precipitous in its decline. It's inevitable that it's going to decline. But that doesn't mean that you must be inevitable in allowing that decline. See, where I grew up in West Virginia, no one ever got younger the older they got as far as their looks. They got progressively older. By the age of 40, they were considered old. For the baby boomers, of which there are 78 million of us, we can remember when you hit 40, you were considered not just middle-aged, you were considered old, because to live into your 60s was considered good. Well, now 60 is the new 35, if you're really into health, and I mean at a serious level. I'm training some people for the Ironman who are in their 50s, but they're competing at a level as if they were 20, because you can literally rejuvenate the cells. But that means you have to put things in to stop the decline of these hormones. And I would start, let's say, with as little as 50 milligrams a day. Now, what will it do? What will DHEA do? Well, it'll do three things that you need. First, it will inhibit multiple factors implicated in metabolic syndrome. That means harming your biochemistry, especially your blood sugar level. and it'll be favorably altering your gene expression. So your genes will express themselves better when you're giving what the gene needs. Secondly, you'll have greater bone strength and you'll help prevent osteoporosis. And third, you'll enhance your memory. Now, if you took 90 milligrams of DHEA a day or higher, it's been shown to improve cognitive function and alleviate depression, both in elderly and among individuals suffering from debilitating mental illness. So those are some of the things that can make a difference with this nutrient. Now, DHEA deficiency is implicated in numerous age-related conditions, including declines in brain and nervous system function. And we have witnessed extraordinary advances in our understanding of the cognitive and memory-enhancing benefits of DHEA. Two large studies showed that levels of DHEAS in elderly patients correlated significantly with positive improvement in cognitive function. And chemically, by the way, DHEA and DHEAS is the sulfated form of DHEA. And prior research has shown that higher DHEAS or sulfated levels were directly associated with improved concentration, working memory, and executive memory decision-making processes. In fact, some Israeli scientists found that the cognitive dysfunction that occurs in schizophrenia is also partly associated with levels of DHEAS and other neurosteroids. And there they used 200 milligrams of DHEA in schizophrenia patients and improved their attention motor skills compared to the placebo. So it's very good in that respect. And DHEA can powerfully mitigate depression and its effects. A National Institutes of Mental Health study of depressive men and women ages 45 to 65 showed significant improvements over 6 weeks among those who took 90 milligrams of DHEA per day for 3 weeks and then 450 milligrams per day for 3 weeks compared to the placebo. They said in their final analysis, quote, this is the National Institutes of Mental Health. We find DHEA to be an effective treatment for midlife onset major minor depression. Now, here's the question. When was the last time any doctor, psychiatrist, psychologist suggested DHEA to help with depression? They don't because they're not aware of the science. In fact, a remarkable study demonstrated reduction in depressive symptoms in a specially challenging population, people suffering from AIDS. Several studies revealed associations of low DHEA levels, and when they were given DHEA, it gave them great benefit. So in summary, let's just look at it. It helps with metabolic disorders. That means diabetes, coronary heart disease. It can modulate the gene expression to shift the metabolic balance in favor of energy utilization and away from storing fat. It can help you with your heart. It has been able to show an improvement in people who have had heart disease, and it supports your osteoarthritis to lessen it. And as you get older, your levels get lower. When DHEA levels get lower, you're more risk at heart disease, diabetes, obesity, loss of vigor, sexual energy, depression, and even your skin will age. I would start at 50 milligrams a day and work up based upon what your blood chemistry shows you need. And don't self-medicate, because when you're doing any form of health program, do it with people who know what they're doing. And finally, if you look at my skin, I don't wear makeup, and this is my face. It's up close. I have 400-watt lights here in the studio, and it's a high-resolution camera, so you're in real close. What you see is you see skin that has zero wrinkles, tightness, and that's because I believe on one level, the phytonutrients, the amount of vitamin C, the type of vitamin C, and DHEA. And why? Because a growing body of evidence suggests that DHEA has especially favorable effects on skin health. And DHEA was shown to increase the production of collagen, the protein that gives youthful skin its suppleness, while decreasing production of the collagenase enzymes that destroy it. So it turns off the bad enzymes, turn on the good, and you'd get better skin and tighter skin. And remember, you have some muscles right under the eyes that go up to the edge of the ear. As you age, these muscles here that I'm showing you on camera, these begin to sag. As those muscles lose their tensile strength, as the collagen begins to weaken, your face, the muscles begin to droop, and as it droops, the skin droops with it. So it's not the skin that is wrinkling, it's the muscles underneath. So that gives you that jowiness where you got that kind of marks around the mouth and you lose that youthful look that you had before, that tightness. Well, you can get your tightness back. So I'm saying we have the science on our side now to reverse the aging process substantially. And there's no reason we shouldn't do it. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome you to our program. I'm Gary Knoll. Trust hormone is associated with happiness. Now, mind you, this isn't some natural publication. This is mainstream science, Science Daily. And this is the Society of Neuroscience publishing in their peer-reviewed journal. And here's what they said. Quote, our findings revealed that the biological basis of social connections, oxytocin, is part of the brain mechanisms that serve to make us happy. And that's according to Claremont Graduate University in California. What does this mean in lay language? It means that the hormone, oxytocin, which is known to be important in trust, is also involved in a sense of well-being. For example, when you are intimate with your partner, not only during the process, but mainly after the process, the brain, more so in the woman, is secreting oxytocin. That is what gives you that sense of warmth, love, the feeling of true intimacy and trust. But what if you're not waking up with someone that you enjoy being with? What if you're a single person? 99.9% of New Yorkers, and you wake up and think, whoa, what happened? Here's the good news, and this is why it's so interesting. Having bonds of friendship, being appreciated, having people compliment you and remember things about you, experiences, reminiscing about things that you've enjoyed with other people, being able, something as simple as just playing volleyball or softball or basketball, that also creates a pleasure principle, different, but also with trust. So it's always good when you do a deal and you have someone shake your hand and says, that's my word, that's my bond. That immediately creates trust in most situations, most people. And that makes us feel good because someone gave us their word. We trust that. And that trust and that feel good and faith in another human being comes from that oxytocin, that hormone. So just imagine that if we began to treat people with dignity and respect, we look for the best in another human being instead of always trying to bring out their faults and limitations. And we let them know that they're important in our lives. That creates oxytocin. That creates that feel-good hormone. And I believe that in our society, there's just too much indifference. There's too much of a separation. People are guarded. They're fearful. They've been used and abused, lied to, manipulated. The people they've let into their lives have abused that trust. So here's what happens on the other end. This is according to the whole principle of epigenetics. If you have been hurt and betrayed and lied to and manipulated, then instead of having the hormone that secretes joy and a sense of pleasure and feel good, you create cortisol, just the opposite. And that raises your blood pressure, it raises your anxiety level, it creates tension and fear and apprehension and a flight or fight and get out of my face and why are you doing it? And all that happens from its opposite. So before you say something, write something, do something, leave messages on emails or text message, whatever it is, think of the outcome. What is the likely outcome? Are you going to create a good feeling or a bad feeling? Because you will create a feeling. There is no such thing as neutral in life. Why do you think we love our pets, our companions? Because they kiss us, they love us, no matter what we look like, no matter how old we are, no matter what kind of day we have, they just can't wait to show that they care for us. We immediately secrete oxytocin. If only human beings could be as thoughtful as our pets. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting from our studio in New York City. We have a couple people to go to before we go to our guest, who's coming up. We're going to have Maud Barlow on, talking about water and why we are past peak water. And while the biggest crisis facing everyone in the world today is where you're going to get your water. I've been looking for a homestead property. My first question is there a sustainable water? Oh, yeah, there's a pond. No, that could be from an aquifer that go dry. How deep is it? Who uses it? I want a spring. I want a Jurassic spring. Oh, well, we didn't know about that. Well, now you know. I want soil. Don't give me sandy soil. Can't grow in it. Give me good soil. Things we don't even think about. We've taken our soil for water and water for granted. Time not to. Joining me on our conference phone is Denise. Hi, Denise.
Hi, Gary. Great to be with you this afternoon.
Denise is one of our homestead participants, meaning she and her husband, both New York City police officers, 20-year veterans, have decided they would like to move out of New York. And to do so, I suggested always make sure you give yourself ample time to prepare yourself. Create the tools you need so you don't have some trauma being forced into a situation so that you can go more effortlessly and prepared. So they chose that they would like to do food production. So what I've done is I've opened my store for people as a public service to either use the kitchen once I determine that their product is economically viable. I don't want anyone doing something where they're not experienced enough at economics and they lose money doing it. And I want people to be able to make a product they can actually profit from. And then I test it out and with my customers, since I have thousands upon tens of thousands, and if they like it, then it gives an idea, hey, you got a good product. If not, they'll learn that lesson too. Then wherever they go and they set up business, they're going with something that's been tested, perfected, and should have a good market. And I believe more and more people in our country should be doing home-based businesses, creating a business. Don't sit around if you're unemployed and wait for the phone to ring. Go out and do something. Be proactive. So what Denise has done is, Denise, you've made some healthy cupcakes.
Yes, that's correct. Wheat-free brownie bites and wheat-free mini muffins. And I've infused them with caramel, butterscotch, and for those that don't particularly care for the infusion, we have plain. And I used organic ingredients, nice healthy ingredients like coconut oil, and I used garbanzo bean flour for those that are allergic to wheat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are wheat-free.
Yes.
Now, Denise will be on Saturday and Sunday all day from 10 in the morning till 8 at night at the store, talking about her product and giving samples out, free samples, so you can give her feedback. And this will be the end of her sampling it. And it's just, I love to see people who've done things like this. We had Roberta Addy, a wonderful human being, very creative, very brilliant. But she did her nut milks. And she was the first to do these nut milks in New York. And she did them all herself. She invented the formulas. She made them. I let her use the basement of the store, the kitchen. And then she tested them. She was so successful, she couldn't keep them in stock. So she was able to create a whole home-based business for herself to augment her broadcasting career and her teaching career. Love to see that. Love to see that happen. So this coming Saturday and Sunday, Denise will be up there. And this has been almost 9 months she's been working on it. She's brought me sample after sample. Said, no, this is not right, giving her feedback. And she keeps using it. She got her ego out of the way. And now she has some perfect products. I want to see other people do the same. The idea is, let's help each other in our society work together so that people have a positive future. Okay, Denise, we'll look forward to seeing you up there Saturday and Sunday.
Okay, great. Thank you, Gary, for everything.
Two of New York City's finest, looking at their post-careers, and that's good. Joining me in the studio is Melissa. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Gary.
Now, Melissa's just started with this. Melissa is a certified nutritionist, dietitian, registered dietitian. She has a background. She's worked some well-known doctors, holistic doctors in the New York area. But she came over and said she wanted to help those people in the audience who need help with their nutritional counseling and health issues. And, of course, she's paid, so you don't have to pay her. You're getting her for free. How's it going thus far?
Oh, it's going great. I'm meeting many people with some issues, and I'm very happy to be helping them out.
What kind of issues they bring you?
I had someone, for example, who had hepatitis C. I had someone with cancer, bladder cancer, so I've been talking to them about their diet and recommending supplements and homeopathic remedies.
Did you see the woman there last night who was sitting in the chair? She's from Trinidad.
I'm not sure.
She's a professor, and she was near death. And that was a year and a half ago. Oh, she's not
oh,
now.
Wow. No, she's great.
Yeah, she's in good health. She comes in, and what's funny is she comes in, she talks very loud. And she tells everyone her story. They're coming in just to buy stuff. But she wants to get people involved in health, and it's just wonderful to see that. So you're going to be talking with people, lining up some point, because Pat Dunkson is booked solid. Through January.
Mm-hmm.
So if people would like to see you, give the number.
The number is 212-874-4000, and they can ask for me, and we can set up an appointment.
Good, that's
for them to come in.
And you got to come in and see her.
Yes,
she got to see you there, and give them quality time. All right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. Well, we look forward to getting some positive response back, as we do with Pat, of people who reverse their diseases.
Great. Well, I look forward to doing that.
So there's Melissa, another person, highly qualified, licensed, dedicated to helping people with their health issues, and she's free. It's what I do as a public service to help people in this audience, because my rule is no one should ever be so poor that they should not be able to get quality help. Good. All right, thank you very much. Back in a moment with your questions and comments, a couple more things I want to talk about, and about Big Agra, and then we'll go to our guest. I'd like to welcome all of you all over the United States, and also a special shout out to all of my compatriots down in West Virginia. A radio station down there, a music station, is playing this program twice a day, even though it's a music station. Did you get the email, Kara Lee?
I did. As a matter of fact, I was the one who set everything up with them.
Yeah, well, we want to thank them for carrying this program every day. Interesting enough, the guy also lived in Parkersburg, didn't know I was born and raised in Parkersburg, and then he moved to Wheeling, which I moved to Wheeling, so it was kind of an interesting association. In any case, I want to begin this segment of our program by explaining once again why I'm concerned about genetic engineering of food, of animals, and this is the latest. This is from Anthony Gusideria. And it says from Natural News, it says, genetically modified food has run rampant within the past few years. A new genetically modified creation has emerged and may soon end up on our dinner table. Researchers in India have developed a genetically modified potato loaded with genetically altered amino acids. It seems as if scientists are attempting to create nature entirely. Genetically modified fish have threatened the very genetic coding of fish worldwide, and the genetically modified canola plant has spread into the wild. It is apparent that a tidal wave of genetic modulation has hit the environment very hard. Genetically modified potatoes now threaten the purity of potatoes internationally. All it takes is a careless farmer to allow his modified genetic crop to be planted elsewhere without properly labeling the crop as modified. This would mix in the genetically modified crop with traditional organic crops. This is a legitimate environmental issue, and it's a major threat to food integrity. Arguably as important as the need to protect our food supply is the need to protect ourselves from the deadly effects of genetically modified food. Consuming genetically modified food can lead to autoimmune disorders, organ failure, sterility, and much more. If you're unfamiliar with the risks associated with modified food, you're not likely to be familiar with how it's created. The process in which food is genetically modified is extremely outlandish. Billions are spent each year to genetically modify the food supply, leading to an influx of tainted food products. Genetically modifying food requires one to tamper with the very genetic coding of the crop or seed. The process entails the transfer of genes from one organism to another, such as taking particular genes from a pig and transferring them into a tomato. Not only does this defile nature, but it also leads to a host of health problems. By the way, for our kosher and our Muslim listeners, better be aware that that is actually the case. You better check the tomatoes, because I'm sure you wouldn't want pig genes in the tomato that you're eating, and it, right now you wouldn't know. And due to the complexity of a living organism's genetic structure, it is impossible to track the long-term results because no one's ever looked at the long-term results. There's never been a study of long-term results of this. Now, this is the newest one on this. Brussels, Food and Water Europe released a report today outlining why the genetically engineered salmon currently being considered by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for approval as a human food will not alleviate global hunger. Genetically modified salmon will not feed the world outlined several reasons why this transgenic fish is likely to be more expensive to produce than perceived, as well as problematic for the environment, fishing communities, and consumers. The report was released a day after Scottish MP Rob Gibson motioned to petition the Scottish government to monitor the FDA's approval process, noting that escaped fish are likely to occur through time and could easily reach the shores of Scotland, quote, altering forever the genetic integrity of wild Atlantic salmon and the quality of Scottish salmon. And finally, if you begin to see on the website, and we are now, people on radio, television coming up saying, but I'm for food safety. I'm against, you know, people who are saying we shouldn't guard against this. Let me give you one example of this. This is Barry Estabrook from The Atlantic. It says, quote, the White House garden may be green and unsullied by agricultural chemicals, but Obama's United States Agricultural Department just forked over hundreds of thousands of dollars to fund an agribusiness-backed smear campaign against the Environmental Working Group's Shopper's Guide to Pesticides, which includes the Dirty Dozen, a list of foods most commonly found to have pesticide residues. In July, the website called SafeFruitAndVeggies.com was launched with the sole purpose of debunking these guidelines. The website was headlined The Real Dangers of the Dirty Dozen was started by the Alliance for Food and Farming. Sounds innocent enough, right? Well, it bills itself as a nonprofit organization made up of farmers and farm groups who want to communicate their commitment. But then you took a deeper look. Who are these people? Well, Sunkiss, Western Growers, California Strawberry Commission, California Tomato Farmers, California Association of Pest Control Advisors. The alliance requested the federal dollars through the California Department of Food and Agriculture, quote, to correct the misconception that some fresh produce items contain excessive amounts of pesticide residues. So what you have is you have one group, a real consumer group, telling us here are the foods that have the highest amount of pesticides, including celery. This is the worst. Celery, peaches, strawberries, apples, blueberries, nectarines, bell peppers, spinach, cherries, kale, collard greens, potatoes, and grapes. Those are the Dirty Dozen. If you don't buy those organic, don't buy them. The clean ones are onions, avocados, sweet corn, pineapples, mangoes, sweet peas, asparagus, kiwi, cabbage, eggplant, cantaloupe, watermelon, grapefruit, sweet potato, honeydew, and honeydew melons. And that's it. They don't want you to know that, but they're faking it. Just be aware, you're going to get a lot more of that fake stuff out there. Kara Lee.
Good afternoon, Gary. Well, first of all, I wanted to start off with a really nice email I got from a man named Louise, and he said, "Dear Gary, I just wanted to send you a heartfelt thank you for your noble efforts in keeping the public notified and educated on what concerns our well-being and rights." So this goes right back to talking about food safety. "I heard a couple of your messages on your programs regarding the S-510 bill and took it to heart. Myself, along with a few other dedicated people, banded together on Saturday to get together, writing up flyers which we gave out to farmers and public and the general public in Union Square, and other information was sent to hundreds of recipients. I just wanted to thank you with all the members of Princeton, New Jersey, as well as our Union Square coalition that you have done over the past few years. I've been an active listener since 1979, and he says that he's learned a lot and he owes you a lot over the last few years. And I just wanted to say additionally on that that we have put up a link to sign the petition to go against S-510. It's on the homepage of Progressive Radio Network. We've got a lot of articles and issues up there from the Alliance for National Health right on the homepage, and we are going to have an exclusive update from the Alliance for National Health up later this afternoon around 4 o'clock about what the current state is with that bill. And it is going to Senate tomorrow, Gary?
I believe it's going to be voted on tomorrow. We need to show we are protesting this bill. We need to show that the tester, T-E-S-T-E-R, excuse me, amendment, is what we do want, but we don't want the bill. So if they're not going to kill the bill, at least vote for the tester amendment in the bill, which would do some good. But the question I get is, why is Ralph Nader for this? Why are many groups that historically have been on the right side of issues on the wrong side of this one? I believe that with all due respect to Ralph Nader, who's going to be on the show later this week, and I'll ask him about this, I believe they just simply haven't read it. We've done a major investigation on it. We've seen that Monsanto's behind it. We've seen that we have already 15 good quality health protection safety laws on the books. They're just not being implemented. So we don't need another law, because this law had provisions that would make it against that you'd go to prison for 10 years if you violated. It was clearly an effort by the major industries to destroy the organic movement, the back to the earth movement, the local farm movement, and then control all of the pesticides. And we don't want that. We want freedom of choice. So they didn't do their homework on this one. We have. And we have all the articles up there and the proof and the actual language from the bills. So let them go to GaryNull.com to be brought up to date.
Thanks so much, Gary. Do we have time for one last one?
Sure.
All right. Well, this one I thought you would get a kick out of. It's an article about how some boys in Westchester County, which is, you know, just north of here, wanted to sell some cupcakes in the local park to make some money. And as a matter of fact, one of the local town committee officers called the cops on them, and so the cops came into the park. They didn't arrest the boys, but they told them that they had to stop. And one of the boys was crying and everything, and I just thought it was a really interesting story about how these kids aren't even allowed to make some money, be creative in their free time.
One of the issues that I'm very concerned with excuse me, is that today we are overregulated. When I was growing up, I remember selling lemonade for a nickel out in front of my house. All my other buddies did the same thing. Several of the little girls who lived in the neighborhood, we were all young, did the same thing. Today, you would have a whole group of people saying, well, they don't have a permit. That's the bureaucrats, and you got to have a $450 permit, or you can't do it. And then you have to be licensed, and then you have to have a place that has certain health standards, or otherwise it could be contaminated, and therefore you have to have an industrial kitchen. You have to have a food handler's license, even to make lemonade. We've become an obsessive society. We are a sick society. Shame on the man. Let me know his name. I want to call him out. Shame on this man for what he did. The man, shame on you, Wolfson. And who are you? You work for the city, so you thought it was your duty to bring in the cops on two kids trying to sell some cupcakes. Would you have done the same if they were selling heroin or methamphetamine? Doesn't seem to be any shortage of people selling drugs all over the place. But two kids wanting to do the right thing, shame on you. And shame on your community. You know, if I was up there, this is exactly why the libertarian movement is gaining some traction, finally. And the constitutionalists are getting some traction, finally. And the humanists are getting traction, finally. And the peace activists, finally. And the independents, finally. Against the septic mindset of the Democrats who love these laws. Oh, my God, you know, they've never seen a law they don't like. Well, I do. And I'm saying we should unshackle the American consumer, unshackle the small business corporations from the excessive totalitarian mindset that we only exist to serve the needs of bureaucracies. I would like to see 50% of all state, local, and federal employees fired. Let them go out into the real world that the rest of us live in, that no politician ever has set their foot in, except when it comes time to act like you care about your constituents, to go around and pander yourself, to kiss a baby and drink a beer and do some bowling. Let's see if you ever see those people back in that bowling alley, or back in that diner, or back on your street. The reality is we should have people having the freedom to express themselves in legitimate, conscientious ways. The rules we do need, we have in place for our safety. Otherwise, we all should live in a bubble and let the bureaucrats dictate that we work for the government, we live for the government, we're controlled by the government, we're spied on by the government, the FISA bill showed that they were illegally wiretapping us, listening to our phones. Now, that may not offend a lot of people who are lost in their own hubris. It offends me. It offends other people. Doesn't offend the Democrats. Doesn't offend the Republicans. They could care less. Because they're both part of the problem, and we all are aware of that now. I want to see America unshackled from its own obsessive nature. I want to see more holistic cupcakes and parks. Thanks for that.
All right, thanks all right. So much, Gary.
Yeah, I'm the wrong person to ask about freedom of choice. All right. And one of those freedoms is the freedom not to have a bureaucrat every time you breathe telling you need a permit. I thought this morning, I was just thinking this morning, how much taxes I have to pay. I have to pay all these taxes, landlord taxes. I pay the landlord. Everybody who's a business person has to pay your landlord's taxes. All right, they don't pay the tax. You do. It's added into your rent. Then you have to pay at least 7 other taxes to own a business. Then when you finally, if you're able to make a profit, then you're paying city, state, and federal tax on top of that tax. And we wonder why the American public are concerned. And then we see where that money goes, to wars, to militarization of the planet, to corporate pork barrel projects? No. No, we need a major transformational process. I'll be dealing with that in my commentary this afternoon at 3 o'clock. By the way, I'm going to give you some information on the polio vaccine, its development, and the fraud that it is today at 3 o'clock.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, Gary.
Thank you. Let's go over to my guest standing by. She was on once before, and a lot of people really appreciate what she had to say. She is Maude Barlow. She is the national chairperson for the Council of Canadians, an advocacy organization focusing on environmental issues. She is co-founder of the Blue Planet Project, which is an international project to challenge corporates taking private control of freshwater resources. Nice to have you back with us today.
Delighted to be back. And I also just wanted to say that I chair the board of Food and Water Watch, which is a great American organization, Washington-based, and anybody wants information, they can go to foodandwaterwatch.org for more of an American view or of the water crisis and our answers.
Good. Maude, I recently saw an article in an international publication dealing with the World Bank, as well as the International Monetary Fund, wanting to do more to privatize water resources. And I thought, my goodness, the world, the average person never knows what the World Bank or International Monetary Fund are doing, but here is a major organization with virtually unlimited resources and enormous political control when it goes into a country, now once again getting corporations to go into countries and to take over the water systems And never once in these countries do they improve it, do they make it better. Instead, they frequently don't service it, take the profits, and turn off your water, which could be your life source of water, if you can't pay the bills. So I'd like you to first state some statistics. I saw the latest that this was a Canadian study showed the world could warm another 10 degrees in the next 90 years. Also, half of our tropical forests are gone, and at the current rate, 10% only 10% remain in the next 20 years, and 90% of our large ocean fish have disappeared, and half the world's wetlands have destroyed. Every day, 2 million tons of sewage and industrial waste is discharged into the water, and yet there is six times more waste water produced annually than the water in the world's rivers, with 80% of the rivers in peril. So if people don't think that the water issue is important, I'd like for you to show them why it is, why we should not be privatizing these waters, and instead what we should be aware of. The forum is yours.
Well, thank you very much, and lovely to be on the program with you. Just to say that the world really is running out of fresh water. It's something we all learned back in grade six wasn't possible, because there's this finite amount of water going around the hydrologic cycle, and it can't go anywhere, is what we all learned. But in fact, as we our demand for water grows, and the way we grow food, the way we pump huge amounts of water into big cities and then they dump it into the ocean and it doesn't get returned to the land, or we grow food in deserts when we destroy water tables, we're pumping up groundwater so fast. Brand new global study said that if the groundwater pumping around the Great Lakes is equivalent or about the same amount as the groundwater pumping around the world, the Great Lakes will be bone dry in 80 years. I mean, we are literally taking the world's water stock and either polluting it or putting it where we can't get at it. So we have a really serious question here about what to do. And a question very much, of course, about who makes decisions around access. So you've got on one side those who put it on the open market for sale, who want to control the public, the service and on a for-profit basis, sell it as a market commodity, let it go out there, and so what if lots of people die? That, you know, it will be a commodity like running shoes or Coca-Cola. On the other are those of us who say very strongly that water is a part of our collective heritage. You can't live without it. We have no substitute for it, and we have to protect it as a public project, a public service, but also a public trust. And we have to protect source water and ecosystems. We simply cannot continue to destroy water at the rate that we're destroying it. You know, it's important for your listeners to know that when recent studies are talking about which parts of the planet are in trouble water-wise, one of the areas is the United States. It's the Southwest and the West, and even the Southeast now are considered among the areas most seriously at risk in the entire world, along with Australia, the Mediterranean, the Middle East, Northern China, and India. These are the areas that are most at risk. So we have to take collective care, and the only way to do this is if we protect our source water better. Nature put water where it belongs, basically. We've got to stop playing God and moving it all over the place. We have to stop polluting it, and we have to really make sure that there's equitable access. When a private company comes in and takes over water in whatever form, it's going to do what every private corporation does. It's going to benefit by scarcity. It's going to benefit by dirty water, because then they either get to clean it up or sell the clean stuff to you more, you know, at a higher rate. They've got to make a buck. Even if the people running the corporation are good people, the corporation has to make money based on these notions of, you know, competition and scarcity. That may be one thing if you're talking about something you can recreate. Something you can, you know, like shoes or whatever, but it is not okay when it's something you cannot recreate. So we are saying strongly that we need to invest in infrastructure. At Food and Water Watch, we're calling for an infrastructure fund, a freshwater fund that would be there so that municipalities wouldn't have to privatize, and that we keep the rates at a reasonable level so that nobody is going to be denied water. You should know, your listeners may say, well, this is all, you know, relevant for the Global South and so on. But in Detroit City, just as one example, there are 72,000 people without water access now because they couldn't afford to pay their bills. And now the city's coming in and taking away their children because they can't provide them with clean water, and therefore they're, you know, they're living in substandard situations. So it's not just something far, far away. As water becomes more scarce, as the prices go up, and as it becomes privatized, it is going to become the purview of the rich, as is the kind of good food that water can provide, and there'll be substandard food for others. This is a very, very big issue that I don't think most people know much about, haven't thought about it, think somebody will figure it out or some technology will come along, and in fact, that's not the case. We need to demand of our politicians and our leaders that they start taking this issue seriously.
I appreciate those insights. Tell us what you see as the most likely scenario if we do not heed your advice in Europe, in the United States, and some of these other countries.
Well, right now, around the world, water is the biggest dirty water is the biggest killer of children. Dirty water kills more children than HIV, AIDS, war, and accidents put together. It is the number one killer of people generally in the Global South. Every 3.5 seconds, a child dies of waterborne disease in poor countries. Now, in the wealthier countries, we've managed to put this off quite a bit, because even if we don't have water, we have money. So you have money to clean it or whatever, or to import the things that water is in. And it's something called your water footprint. It's all the water that you use for your goods and services. So if you import that in the form of food or wheat or flowers or whatever, stuff you don't want to use your own water for, in effect, you're able to buy yourself a little time out of this water shortage. But it's not going to last. This is the most important thing for your listeners to know, that we are draining down the world's current supplies of water. And a brand new study of some of the big corporations, who deal in massive amounts of water, say that in 20 years, the demand for water in the world will outstrip supply by 40%. It's an incredible new statistic, and I have never seen one as alarming as this one. And it was done by, not by some lefty organization. It was done by the big water companies and the Coca-Cola and these kind of companies. So we do have a crisis upon us, and we're going to have to be really understanding that even if in wealthier places like North America and Europe, water will someday be so expensive that only the wealthy will be able to buy it. That's why we oppose bottled water. We want to keep the water coming out of our taps safe, clean, and affordable. And right now in municipalities in North America, it is. But if we don't continue to put money into and support the infrastructure that we need for clean water, you're going to get to a point where clean water will be the purview of the wealthy. And you're already seeing that in huge parts of the world. It's going to come to a community near you. The other thing we're going to have to really look at is the way we grow food, because the single biggest culprit in making dirty water and in using too much water badly is industrial food production, where we grow things like cotton in the desert, right? Or we grow massive amounts of biofuel, which uses huge amounts of water, and then we export that biofuel or the corn or whatever out of you're exporting water in those exports. You're exporting not only out of the watershed, you're exporting right out of your country. Most Americans don't know that in the United States, a third of your daily water use is actually exported right out of the country every single day in the form of exports. And usually it's large corporations like Monsanto. I heard you talking about Monsanto earlier, and these big agribusiness companies. So they're taking local water, using it to grow stuff, to export massively out of the country for their financial benefit. It doesn't stay in the watershed. It doesn't benefit small farmers or local communities. Mm. And what's going to come in the United States is what already happens in places like Chile, where they have actually public auctions. And big mining companies, for instance, from Canada, or big agribusiness companies come in and bid against it.
For those of you listening, Maud Barlow's my guest. I'm Gary Knoll. I want to thank you for tuning in and over our different stations. Please continue with your thoughts, including this. I'm concerned that the right and much of the corporate polluters and the very wealthy elite, like the Koch brothers, but not limited to the Koch brothers, you have the Schaeff Foundation people, are funding a disinformation campaign on global warming. If you ask the average American, talk about environmental issues, they'll say, oh, global warming, but half are not supportive of it. And I'm concerned about that. I would like your input on that. Oh, Maud Barker, we just got a disconnect. We'll try to get it right back up and then continue on with that issue. And by the way, she had a wonderful article commondreams.org called Our Commons Future is Already Here, a stirring call to unite the environmental and global justice movements on the subject of water. And so let's get her back and see what she has to say on this. Hopefully we'll get her right back. Okay, we'll get her right back. Also, and she's also with the Blue Planet Project. Now, this afternoon at my 3 o'clock show, I'm going to do the most comprehensive discussion you've ever heard on why vaccines, especially the polio vaccine, is a fraud. And I'm going to go methodically through it and document by document show you why you've been lied to and manipulated on the subject of vaccines. You got disconnected there. I was saying that the American public, when you talk about environmental issues, seems to only be able to grasp one issue at a time.
I know.
And already there's an enormous effort to discredit the legitimacy of global warming.
I agree.
But then when you start talking about acid rain and pesticide runoff and hog farmers North Carolina or fish farming in the Atlantic, they just can't wrap their mind around how plastic in the Pacific.
I know.
We have at least 161 separate environmental issues. And not one of these are being discussed in any reasonable way by the mainstream media or made important by any members of Congress. Your thoughts, please.
Well, I deeply agree with you, and I'm very, very worried. I think that, you know, while I know climate change is terribly important, I feel that it's the only issue being discussed as if the others don't matter. And in fact, the way we are destroying water and removing it from watersheds is very much a part of the crisis itself. That you remove water from watersheds, and that creates deserts, and that creates global warming. So the treatment of water, the destruction of water, is actually part of the story of climate change. We are going to have to change the way we relate to nature. Everything we have, everything we eat, everything we wear, all the electronics, our cars, our lifestyle, everything comes from nature. And we have we've thought of nature and water, but all kinds of nature, as being a service to us. It's a resource for human comfort and profit. And if we don't turn our heads around and say, no, it's actually what gives us life, and it won't give us life anymore, you know, if we don't stop acting like this. I just saw an interview with a former environment minister in Great Britain, not a left-winger, particularly a kind of a, you know, in the middle of the road kind of guy, who said he doesn't think humans will be on the Earth past another 200 or 300 years. He said the way we're going, the Earth will protect itself from us. We'll be the virus that it turns on, because we just simply don't know how to live here properly or with other beings. When we just think that there's no end to our right to these resources, we have to understand they are finite. We're running out. We're running out of big fish in the sea. We're running out of energy. We're running, you know, the conventional sources of energy. We're running out of clean water. We're running out of old growth forests. There will come a time when we cannot continue this. And a lot of the answer is going to be around back to local food production, local industrial production, this kind of more taking care of your neighbors kind of thing that we've had in the past, these transition towns and so on, which is one of the reasons I continue to fight these big free trade agreements, because they continue to push us on the path of growth and globalization and more stuff, and the globalization of our clothing and every other. Do you know, I'll just give you an interesting stat. In 1965, 95% of all the clothing bought and worn in the United States was made in the United States. Now it's only 5%. Only 5% of the clothes Americans wear and buy is made in the United States. And that's how fast the globalization of our economy happened. But it's happened at a price. It's happened at the price of North American workers, obviously. I mean, we know that story. But it's also happened at a price for the earth. We can't continue to just keep chipping away at this stuff and think it'll renew. We have to be more respectful of this beautiful earth that gives us life. And it would be good to see humans a little humbled. I think that would be the way I would end the thought here.
It's called a smackdown, and it's going to happen.
Yeah, it is. It is going to happen.
And let me give you my thought on this for our final discussion points. You and many other people in the progressive movement looking for positive solutions that would help all people, even those people who are indifferent or angry at you of trying to help them, must also balance that with the reality of economic growth in India, China, Brazil, and the BRICS in Russia. Here is the problem that must be addressed, and right now cannot be. And this is where there must be almost an inevitable catastrophe before they finally are forced to make the right choices. China and India, in particular, and Brazil, are growing at anywhere from a 6 to 11% per year. These are highly dense populations. Between China and India, you're dealing with about 1.3 billion people per country, give or take 100 million. The majority are dirt poor, and therefore they're not a part of the political and economic discussion. However, with an educated group and a mobile working group of about 300 to 400 million people in both countries, when these people begin to succeed around industries more often than not that are state-supported or subsidized, especially in the case of China, where its currency is undervalued, so it can make products cheaply with exploited labor and then export them cheaply to countries that at one time made those products, including clothes made in the United States. I used to go down and help the International Ladies Garment Worker Union with their health issues. In fact, I was their official nutritionist and got them all on diets, and they were making living wages. They weren't rich, but at least they took home enough with health benefits and to
have a living.
To have a living.
Yeah.
Now, those jobs now have been outsourced because of corporate and political elites working together to see that the unions were busted, those jobs went to China or India or Haiti or elsewhere, and now Walmart is selling that same item minus the American labor, and the person who used to make the product now goes down to buy the product, which is one of the reasons I want to see Walmart boycotted. I want everyone to take their money out of all large banks.
Yeah.
I want them to sell their stock. I don't want them involved in the Wall Street game at all.
Yeah.
I want them to stop supporting multinational brands completely. I want them to buy only locally organic produce. I want them to buy locally made things from artists and crafts, and stop buying what you don't need. If you don't actually need something, give it away. Use it yourself, but don't clutter with what you don't need. That's this whole idea, we got to keep growing. And I'm saying, no, you're keeping growing is the wrong, because China has run out of resources.
I know.
So China now goes to Brazil, or no, not Brazil in this case. It did go to Brazil, but it also went to Peru. And Peru has one of the rarest mahogany forest, and it buys it. Japan was already there buying it, but now China says, we'll pay more.
I know.
And so now the entire forest in the next 10 years will be gone forever.
I know.
That was a major watershed. It trapped carbon. It gave off moisture, which then created vapor that allowed seed clouding and allowed rainfall. That's gone.
Yeah.
Now you have copper and tin.
Yeah.
And cobalt and minerals that the Chinese need to make computers.
I know.
They're going into Russia to harvest their great forests.
They're buying up huge amounts of land in Africa, Chinese and the Indians, and hedge funds are buying up huge. They bought up a tract of land twice the size of the United Kingdom just to have the land and the water for when they need it in future times.
And also to speculate on it, because they're frequently borrowing money at zero interest.
Yeah.
And they can park that investment elsewhere.
Yeah.
So anyhow, what I'm looking at is the reality that China and India and these other countries are not run as one mindset. They're controlled by their own mini oligarchs who see their own potential to make a profit. And so I'm saying, how do we deal with the people who are rich and powerful by exploiting natural resources and their association with easy capital, low interest capital, and government support in these countries against the resources that are finite, whether water, whatever it would, whatever it may be, until the day comes a reckoning where those people who want their hot dogs, hamburgers, hams, chicken in China, in India, they want their cheeseburgers, they want their French fries. A, they got diabetes. B, they have heart disease. C, they have cancer. Now they have no environment. Their soil is gone. They've tapped out their own water. They have no forest. There's desertification in India and China and Brazil. And now none of this is being dealt with by the major media because we have to beg them to give us money to pay for our credit card bills and our military adventures around the world. The final thoughts are yours. Take your time.
Well, I have an easy solution. No, I don't. I'm joking. You have laid out the problem brilliantly, and of course, this is what we're dealing with. This is this reality. I guess I have to have faith, okay, that there are people like you, like me, who like your listeners, who care, and not just in here in our countries, but around the world, that people on the ground see what's happening. I know there's a huge resistance in India, for instance, to the whole creation of these free trade zones where farmers and peasants are thrown off the land and they come in and the Walmarts and these guys set up shop. There is a huge movement against that, a fierce movement. People have been killed. People have put their lives on the line. People have put their lives on the line against the big bottling companies in India. You don't hear about it as much in China because the media is so controlled, but there are thousands of demonstrations, labor, human rights, environmental demonstrations every year in China. There's much more unrest than people know about. I have to have faith that what I see, others see, which is that we were given this gorgeous gift of this earth and we have to take care of it. And if we don't, well, then it will be left to some other species to try to, you know, make something of. I mean, if we continue to foul our own nest in the way that we're doing, you know, the earth will kick us off the island kind of thing. So I have to have some faith, otherwise I wouldn't be able to do this work. And so the faith I have is the work. I just had a meeting. We're planning to have a whole project to have the Great Lakes declared a commons and a public trust and a protected bioregion. I was there at the United Nations in the summer when the fundamental right to water and sanitation was adopted by the General Assembly. We just saved a great big lake in British Columbia, a great big lake that was destined to be destroyed by a big mining company. So I have to go by these smaller victories and hope that these will become exponentially important and grow around the world, because we have to have hope. I believe, and you said final words, my final words are that hope is a moral imperative, and we have to just live every day these values that we have and hope that others are living them too.
I believe that your hope is well-founded, because I believe that with over 44% of all voters now considering themselves independents, who at one time had been closely aligned with either the Republican or Democratic mindset, and they're seeing that that has failed them, that has not provided the answers to the world, to health, to humanity, to peace, that they are now looking for other solutions. And now with a coalition of Greens and constitutionalists and environmentalists coming together, I believe that in not the immediate future, but I see about 4 or 6 years from now, that what the Tea Party did this last time to support the Republicans, there will be an independent movement that will support a third party that will get dynamic change and have environmental correction and transformation as its number one agenda. Thank you very much, Maude Barlow.
My pleasure. Love to you and all your listeners.
Maude Barlow, and she is with the very important group, the BluePlanetProject.com. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day. Flowers.
The Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.